There's a lot of things in this old world that just do not make sense. Like why there's so few believers on the firing line, while so many others sit the fence. But if you want to know where the Word of God stands, and believe it wants to use your feet and hands, it's time to take your faith out of the seats and into the streets, and come along with me. If you only look, then you will see on WCN TV.
Boy, they came up fast today. That was faster than usual. Welcome to WCN TV. We're broadcasting live. It's Tuesday, March 31st, 2026, and I want to thank you for being with us. We have a lot of topics we want to cover today, so we're going to jump right into it. My guest today is Alex Newman. Most of you already know Alex pretty well, but for those who don't, he's a highly respected investigative journalist, educator, speaker, and author, with a wealth of knowledge on just about any topic you can come up with. When I think of the smartest guy I know, it's always Alex. We're going to be talking about some of the major world events and headlines today, and we have a lot to cover, so let's go. Alex, thanks for being here, and it's been too long. Last time you were here was tax day of last year.
It is great to be here. Thank you very much for having me, Rob. And yeah, time flies, huh?
Yeah, it does. You know, I didn't realize it. So I want to get into things. I think we'd all like to know your thoughts on the current wars and rumors of wars. Obviously, we want to talk about Iran. But first, to me, it's strange that we haven't heard much of anything lately about Ukraine after it dominated the headlines for so long. From what I've been able to gather, the fighting there is still pretty intense. They're using drones and missiles, and the U.S. is still Ukraine's largest military supporter. And we're still sending funds there, but they've been cut to millions instead of billions. After a while, that turns into real money. It also appears that the U.S. is supplying weapons, but these are now going through European nations first and then to Ukraine. So apparently, we're not sending them directly to Ukraine. Instead, we're laundering them through Europe. So what are your thoughts? Do you have any intel on what's happening over there?
Yeah, it's a meat grinder, and it has been all along. And unfortunately, there seems to be very little will on either side to make it stop, which is really unfortunate. But I actually believe this was going to be the case all along. You have powerful forces around the world, and I believe that very much includes Vladimir Putin. I believe it very much includes Zelensky. I believe it very much includes most of the foreign policy establishment in Washington, D.C. and Beijing, and the folks over in Brussels at the European Union headquarters and the folks at NATO headquarters. They believe that war is a means to an end. And we normally think of the end being like, you know, settling the conflict and achieving your military objectives. And I don't really see that being the case here. Like, what are the objectives, right? Russia's going to seize a little bit of territory and keep it. The Ukrainians are going to get back a little bit of territory. That seems to me too superficial of an explanation. So when I look at why these globalist forces are so intent on having more and more war, I think the answer came from a 1962 report that the U.S. State Department commissioned called The World Effectively Controlled by the United Nations, where Lincoln Bloomfield, a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, kind of like deep state headquarters here in the United States, was asked to figure out how do we get from a world of sovereign nation states to a one world order controlled by the United Nations. And he said that organic trends would take centuries to get there, but that if we wanted to accelerate that process, we should use war, the threat of war and grave crises to bring about changes in national attitudes, and also to use a process of regionalization of government, whereby sovereign nations and sovereign nation states have their sovereignty eroded in exchange for these regional supranational governments, very much like the European Union that the Europeans are building and the Eurasian Union that Vladimir Putin is building. And so I think that's really the lens that this has to be seen through. There is a deliberate effort by a lot of the Western globalists, right? I think a lot of people are misunderstanding this, to reshape the world order. And they want to move from, and I started reporting on this 15 years ago. It's just now becoming into the kind of the popular lexicon. But they want to move from the unipolar world order of a hegemonic United States toward this multipolar world order where regional governments, communist China, Moscow, the European Union would take kind of an equal place at the table alongside the United States, alongside a significantly weakened United States. And I think that's really the essence of what's happening in Ukraine. And so I think people will keep dying. And I think if given the opportunity, either the Russians or the Ukrainians or the European Union or NATO will seek to escalate in a way that would expand this dramatically. And I should add, the Russians have been very clear over and over again. They don't report it much in the American media that they will use nuclear bombs against us, against the Brits, against others, if we don't stop doing what we are still doing. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the long-term goal that they have. But in the short term, I've got to believe there's a lot of this is about the money, the billions of dollars that have flowed through this thing.
It's always about the money. Yeah,
you know, the military-industrial complex they're making a fortune. And you can't tell me that all the money that we've sent to Ukraine has gone toward the war effort.
We know some of it came back to our election. They were going to give it to Joe Biden.
it just simply isn't possible. So, right. Yeah. Yep. So,
yeah, but no, you're absolutely right. What they've done here is they do this on every issue. It's not just the war, but they set up an incentive system where every group has an incentive, at least all the groups that they need has an incentive to do what they want us to do. So like with immigration, right? The government schools all have an incentive because their funding formula is based on how many children they have. So they want open borders. The big companies have an incentive because they want cheap labor. It's the same thing with the war, right? The neocons have an incentive because they think it's going to empower the military industrial complex. The shareholders of all the companies have an incentive. The generals have an incentive because they want more prestige. Everybody along the food chain gets an incentive to participate in the policy that is desired. And you're absolutely right. The military industrial complex is central to this. They're making money hand over foot, not just in Ukraine, but around the world.
What are your thoughts on Trump as far as the, he ran on the promise that he was going to end the thing in Ukraine, you know, within his first 100 days, I think he said. And all of a sudden, that's just not even being talked about anymore.
Yeah. To say I'm disappointed would be an understatement. The things that Donald Trump campaigned on, a lot of them were really important. Arresting the deep staters who tried to destroy him and his family and his supporters, right? I haven't seen any arrests. We haven't even seen arrests with the Jeffrey Epstein files. I mean, are you kidding me? You've got smoking gun evidence that some of the most powerful people in the country are raping children. You would think that would be more than enough to do something. So I'm very disappointed on that front. Obviously, not only have the wars not ended, they've either expanded or we've started new ones, right? I know he's the peace president and he won the peace prize and all that. I understand some of the rationale. I've heard all the talking points, but one of the reasons so many Americans voted for him, and this is true with Barack Obama too, was because he promised to end the wars. That's what people were hoping for. And that is not what we have received. It's true that the border is far more secure now than it was under Joe Biden. But even the mass deportations that we were supposedly going to see have come to a screeching halt. So it makes you wonder, you know, which of the campaign promises has he really kept? It's not necessarily for lack of trying. He's tried to do some really good things. I want to be a little bit nuanced here because he's done a lot of good. I follow, for example, the climate debate very closely. And honestly, if I was advising Donald Trump on climate policy, he's done every single thing that I would have recommended. So in some areas, he's doing very well. Grateful that the border is under control. But on the wars, on the dismantling of the deep state, on the arrests of the perverts, there's still a lot to be desired.
Yeah, and we're going to get into all that too, hopefully. But let's get into Iran. I've heard conflicting reports. Some have said that the citizens there are dancing in the streets because the Ayatollah has been killed. Others are saying more Iranian people are rallying to support the rulers there again. But is this simply because they want to avoid being executed? So what's happening in Iran?
One of the things about Iran is it's very difficult to get good information. The internet is very tightly controlled if it's available at all. Most of the sources that are public facing are actually owned and controlled by the regime. And even the ones that aren't overtly owned and controlled by the regime are, of course, subject to the jurisdiction of the regime. And, Iran is one of those places where if you say something that the government doesn't like, they'll kill you or they'll arrest you or they'll torture you. And so with that in mind, it's very difficult to get accurate information about what's happening. Certainly, there are people who are very, very pleased to see the regime on defense. I know some Iranians who are very pleased to see the regime under pressure. But we have to think about this in the context of these are people whose country is being bombed. And you've got the commander in chief of one of the militaries that's doing the bombings threatening to take out your power plants, threatening to take out your desalinization plants. This is civilian infrastructure, right? Can you imagine what would happen if just take the worst president you can think of in your lifetime, make him even worse. Would you want a foreign power bombing your local power plant? No, of course you wouldn't, right? That's crazy talk. And so I think, yes, some people are happy. And it's true that there are people who have celebrated the fact that the regime is now playing defense. But there's also a kind of an element of, well, you're attacking our country. And, we may not like our government, but you're still attacking our country. You're dropping bombs on our city. You're killing our people. And this is what always happens, right? People in Afghanistan who picked up arms against the United States weren't necessarily Taliban supporters. They just didn't like seeing foreign troops marching down their streets. Same in Iraq. Not everybody that planted bombs and tried to kill U.S. soldiers was necessarily a big fan of Saddam Hussein. They just didn't want foreign troops occupying their country. So it's very complex. I think Americans get a very simplistic notion of it. They hear the talking points on the news and they don't want to think about it too much. It's far away anyway. So what's the big deal? Plus football's coming on, but we need to be realistic here and recognize that it's not a simplistic picture. It's not everybody hates the Ayatollahs and it's not, everybody hates Trump and hates America. These are real people just like us who've got very complex thoughts and views and perspectives on all these issues.
Well, you mentioned Afghanistan and we had just talked about Russia. As I recall, Russia was at war with Afghanistan for like 20 years, right? And they ended up losing their tail between their legs. And then we went in and did the exact same thing. And then what did we spend 20 years there? And, some of these things are just, you have to wonder what these guys are thinking.
Yeah. Well, I always tell people, if you ever feel really useless or down in the dumps, just remember it took the U.S. government 20 years, trillions of dollars, thousands of American lives to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. Right? And for good measure, we left them $180 billion worth of American military equipment to share with the communist Chinese and to rearm. So, that was so utterly ridiculous. Everybody should have seen that was ridiculous. But that's what you get when you have undeclared wars. Our Constitution has a process for declaring war. And of course, it must involve the Congress. Only Congress is authorized to declare war, not the president. The president is merely the commander in chief of the armed forces, not the nation, the armed forces. And he is to wage war when Congress declares war. The last time we declared war was, of course, World War II, unless you count all the wars they've declared on us. And, Afghanistan is known as the graveyard of empires for a reason. Before it was the Soviets, it was the British. Right? They always learn the hard way that this is a very, very difficult environment to operate in. It's difficult to access. It's difficult to have logistical support. There's mountains and caves. And these are very hardy people. You can't just come in and, say, we're going to bring you democracy. And like suddenly 3,000 years of culture is going to be radically transformed. So that was a catastrophe. And we should have expected that that would be a catastrophe, just like virtually every one of the wars that the presidents of the United States for many decades now have been prosecuting. You could look at Libya, you could look at Syria, you could look at Iraq, you can look at Afghanistan, you could look at the Ivory Coast, you can look at Vietnam and Korea, right? Almost everywhere where the U.S. government has gotten involved without a declaration of war from Congress has turned into a dumpster fire. And I think that's one of the reasons why the founding fathers of this country were so insistent that the war power had to be with Congress and not the president.
So as I see it, back to Iran, things are expanding. Iran is hitting their neighbors, and we actually have troops on the way there, if they're not already there. Are we going to be seeing American troops on the ground?
Depending on what moment you're listening to the president, maybe, right? One moment we're going to blow them to smithereens. The next minute, the war is going to be over any minute now. So it's really difficult to tell. I would hope not. It's very telling, I think, that even neoconservative warmongers who never met a war they didn't want your kids to go die in are calling for this to be wrapped up now. I'm referring, of course, to Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. And what is happening on the ground is very difficult to know for sure. You know, we're hearing the reports from the U.S. government that their military forces are being obliterated, their ability to wage war is being obliterated. And at the same time, we have missiles raining down on our allies and our Air Force bases all across the region. So it's hard to know who to believe. Then you have, of course, the Iranians saying, oh, no, there's no problem here. We're doing just fine. Thank you very much. And we'll keep fighting. We know that's not true either. A lot of their senior leaders have been killed. So I wouldn't be surprised for this to escalate radically and dramatically. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if this escalated into a World War III where Russia and China came. See, that's one thing people don't understand fully about Iran. Iran is deeply intertwined with communist China, and it's deeply intertwined with Russia. And I think the eventual goal of the globalists, of the evildoers, is to start a third world war and to have the United States lose it. And I think that third world war is supposed to involve Russia and China in an alliance together against the United States. Now, will this war mushroom into something like that? I certainly hope not, but I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility. I also think if Trump knows what's good for him and for the country and for the economy, he will say, hey, we did our job. We knocked out some of the worst players. We're coming home, and you better stop building nukes, and you better stop haranguing the Jews, and we can all live happily ever after. But that seems unlikely too. So,
well, it's... To me, it seems unsustainable. You know, we don't really have the allies that we should be having. And I'm talking about European nations, Western nations, and even among our own citizens. So it seems unsustainable to me.
Well, and on that front too, Rob, when Secretary Hegseth started bragging about how long we could sustain this campaign and how many more missiles we had available. With all due respect to Pete Hegseth, to me, that was just basically telling the world, hey, we're almost out of missiles, right? And I knew Pete. I really like Pete. He endorsed my book, and I've worked with him. I was in his Miseducation in America series on Fox. I like Pete a lot, and I know him to be a brother in Christ. But when he is running around telling everybody who will listen that we got plenty of missiles and we got plenty of rockets and we can keep doing this as long as necessary, like, I think anybody objectively looking at this from the outside was thinking, huh, you must be almost out of missiles, right? Why else would you be saying that? We know that the U.S. government is not well prepared anymore to be able to fight even a war against a government like Iran, much less a serious global conflagration like what we might be facing with the Russians and the Chinese.
All right. We're going to shift gears here in a bit, but any questions or comments from people in the audience at this point on this topic, these topics? Now's your chance. Comments? Harry, come on in.
What's the real situation in Israel? No words coming out, and it sounds, what you do here, it sounds like they're getting their rear ends beat.
Yeah, my understanding is that there's a lot of missiles raining down. Their interceptor systems that we helped put there are no longer able to intercept everything that's coming in. There have been civilians killed. They are living in a state of what has been described as perpetual terror. There's constant air raid alarms going off and people having to run to and fro from their shelters. So now would not be a fun time to be in Israel. And, you know, it's a tough situation for them because, you know, as much as some of us may not like this war, it is true that the Iranians have been saying for decades, like, we're going to wipe out the Jews. We're going to cleanse the, we're going to destroy the Zionist occupying power or whatever. And, you know, if you have children, that's kind of a scary thought. And now the missiles are actually raining down. So that's a very troubling thought. And I do believe that if the mullahs could get their hands on a nuclear missile, despite what they say, I do believe that they wouldn't hesitate to use it to kill as many people as they could.
All right. Anybody else? I'm just hoping that Trump has maybe forgotten about his plan to go into Cuba. At least take one thing at a time, finish it, and, you know, whatever happened to the Board of Peace?
Yeah, that's a good
that
point.
That was in the news like days before Iran hit. We were talking about the Board of Peace, and then now we're doing this. Okay. Honestly, it's crazy. All right, we're going to shift gears. I know you follow the UN very closely. In this past November, they held their COP30 convention on climate change in Brazil. Fill us in on those details.
Well, I was actually down there, and I was in the Amazon rainforest. I just want to show people graphically kind of what we're talking about here. This was the official guardian spirit of the UN climate summit. Okay.
Wow.
It was given by the communist Chinese. They said go ahead.
I should say that's alarming or shocking, but it's not. I believe it's a climate change cult.
Yep.
It's a religion rooted in paganism and earth worship. And the whole thing is a massive deception.
It absolutely is. And I think this was really a fitting symbol for what they're doing, right? This was given by the communist Chinese. They said it was a fusion of the Chinese dragon spirit and the Brazilian jaguar spirit. Obviously, you can see it's got some devil horns. You can see it's got fangs dripping with something. You can see it's got the whole world in its hands. And I don't know if you could see there the little doves flying off the planet. And I thought, man, that I could not have come up with a better graphic representation of what's going on here than they themselves produced.
Actually telling the truth about themselves in that,
absolutely.
In that image. You know, you'd think they'd try to put something pretty on there, maybe a little bunny or something. But instead they put that out.
Yep. One of the articles that I wrote, Rob, about the summit, I did two big articles for this. The two things that jumped out at me the most, but one of the ones that I did was about the repaganization of the world. So they subscribe to this idea that the Christianity, the Bible, is the reason we're facing an ecological crisis. And this was first popularized back in the 60s before we even had a global warming hoax. But Lynn White, Professor Lynn White, UCLA, Stanford, Princeton, he went around telling everybody that the biblical understanding of man and nature and reality was the reason that the planet was suffering from an ecological crisis. This idea that humans are made in the image of God, that we're like special somehow, the idea that God put the planet here for us, that we human beings were called to take dominion over nature, over the fish of the sea, over the animals. That's the reason they believed that we had these alleged environmental problems. Not to say there aren't environmental problems, but mostly they're in third world corrupt communist dictatorships, not so much in the West. And so his thinking was, if we could go back to the old pagan values where man is just one part of nature, we're just part of the circle of life, you know, we're kind of like a cockroach or a lizard, you know, we worship the rocks and we live in teepees and, you know, we eat each other and things, then, you know, no problem. Then we'd go back to having a very low population of humans and Mother Earth wouldn't be threatened. And so I think one of the reasons they held it in the Amazon rainforest was to kind of bring this point home. Everywhere you look, I'd estimate that a fourth, maybe a third of all the attendees were supposed to be, you know, native indigenous Americans. So they got a whole bunch of guys out of the jungle and they had them running around with, like, you know, feathers on their head and loincloths, and they all had cell phones and stuff. So I don't know how genuine it was. True story. But they would start these sessions with prayers to the river spirits and the forest gods and the rock spirits, whatever. And like all these world leaders, presidents and kings and potentates and prime ministers and foreign ministers are all like going along with this. And the theme was just constant. If we went back to living like the Indians in the Amazon rainforest, then the planet would be fine and Mother Earth wouldn't be upset with us. And I interviewed a lot of these guys, and they, like, that's what they'll tell you, is that, you know, the ways of the white man, quote unquote, they like to try to associate Christianity with Europe, even though, of course, it came out of the Middle East. That if we could just go back to the ancient pagan ways, everything would be fine and good. And that's a theme that's been with this the entire time I've been going to these. I've been going to these since 2009. I'll never forget 2010 when the head of the UN summit, Cristiana Figueres, the executive secretary of the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, she opens up the conference with a prayer to Ixchel, whom she described as the Mayan goddess of creativity and tapestries. And so she prayed that this Mayan deity would give the delegates the creativity needed to weave a tapestry of solutions to the climate crisis. And so I whip out my computer, and, you know, before you know it, I pull up the first website that popped up. I guess it was Google I was using back then. And Ixchel was the goddess of cannibalism and war and human sacrifice. So I see this all the time. I was in Egypt a few years ago for the climate summit they did on the Sinai Peninsula, and they brought all the religions of the world together. They had, you know, Orthodox and Catholic and evangelical alleged. They had Jews and Hindus and Shintos and Muslims and Buddhists and everybody walk up to the top of Mount Sinai and unveil the new and supposedly improved Ten Commandments. And in fact, I think I showed that at one of your conferences. I interviewed one of the organizers of this, James Sternlich, CEO of the Peace Department. And he says, you know, not only do we have the new Ten Commandments, we're now working on the third covenant that we're going to use to build the kingdom of heaven here on earth. So this paganism runs right through the heart of this UN climate agenda. I'm grateful to Donald Trump for putting it on ice temporarily as far as the U.S. is concerned. But a couple quick things to say about the conference that people probably don't know. They were very proud of the fact that they are indoctrinating children around the world to believe this. You know, Gavin Newsom and his hair showed up to say, like, don't worry, Trump's not a permanent fixture of American politics. He's an invasive species. You know, we'll be right back. Don't worry. You know, America's not going anywhere. So they're very proud that they're brainwashing our kids. They fully expect us to be back ensnared in this. And if you look at the final agreement that was approved without objection by every government in the world, the U.S. government didn't send a delegation, so there was nobody there to object on our behalf. But if you look at the final agreement, they approved this language that claims that there is a carbon budget for humanity and that we have already burned through 4/5 of it. Okay. Let the implications of that sink in. We've only got 20% left to go. And they also said in the final agreement, again, adopted by every government in the world, that because the West and the United States, they call us developed countries, had burned most of that 4/5, most of what's left, the 20%, now needs to be allocated, the carbon budget needs to be allocated to the communist Chinese and the Indians and the Brazilians and et cetera. So this is where they're going with this, folks. It's very, very alarming. And unfortunately, you're not hearing much about it from the fake media.
Well, I can only say that I would like to see even one of those delegates live the lifestyle that they're promoting to push on the rest of us. I'm sure they all flew there in their private jets and lived lavishly in their hotels and were fed pretty well.
So, always. Yep.
You know, I remember back in the 70s being indoctrinated with climate warnings, you know, even then. Except then, it wasn't global warming. The science that they told us was that we'd be frozen stiff in a new ice age by the year 2000. So, yep. You know, it's been going on since I was a kid.
Yep. I followed that closely, too. You know, they were promoting the global cooling hoax all the way up to the 1980s, believe it or not. And if you go back and read their publications, it's incredible. The problem was always human activity. The problem, they actually said the carbon dioxide was what was going to cause this alleged global cooling, this new ice age. And the solution to the global cooling was exactly the same as the solution to the global warming. Give us all your money. give up your freedom, empower the United Abominations, and everything will be fine, right? And they added for good measure, if you read Newsweek, and you know, no offense against Newsweek, I've written for Newsweek, whatever. They threw in there that some experts are proposing that we melt the Arctic ice cap by covering it with black soot. So thankfully, nobody listened to the morons back then. But it's a lot of times the same people, Rob. You look at, for example, Obama's science czar, John Holdren. He was a big-time global cooling nut. He wrote a book with his buddy Paul Ehrlich, the population bomb nut. It was called Eco-Science, published in 1977. They were very concerned about global cooling. And they proposed things like an international regime with an armed force to govern the resources and humanity. They proposed putting sterilizing agents in the water supply to prevent us from having children. They proposed mandatory abortions to deal with the alleged population crisis that was causing too much CO2 and was going to kill us from global cooling. So these people, as funny as it sounds, they're dangerous. Right. They have an ideology that is fundamentally anti-human, that is anti-God, and that is actually very dangerous to us and to our children. And so even though it's funny to look back and realize, like, man, these guys were like so wrong, they're so kooky, they still represent a mortal threat to us and to our countries and to our freedoms.
Well, and they have done some of those things.
Yes, they have.
You know, there's no question that they have done some of those things. I should clarify, I do believe there is some climate change happening, but I believe we are the ones doing it. Our government is doing it, and yep. you can obviously see that. I can see it this morning, with the checkerboard pattern in the sky.
Yep.
Interestingly, when the government shut down last year for about a month, I don't know. There were no chemtrails in the sky the entire time. And the minute they opened up the next day, we had the checkerboard in the sky again.
Yep.
So, you know, they're doing their best to make their, prophecies come true. And Bill Gates has got a whole other agenda with some of his ideas, but, why are we still funding and participating in anything that the UN does?
That's a very good question. And, you know, speaking of Donald Trump and nuance, I've been very grateful to see him withdraw from dozens of UN agencies, including some of the most important ones, right? Not only did he withdraw from the Paris Agreement this time around, but he announced that we are withdrawing from the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, which is the underlying treaty upon which all of these subsequent agreements are built on, right? The UNFCCC is the foundation, and then each year they get together and they add more to it. But if you knock out our membership in the UNFCCC, the whole thing comes crashing down. So I'm grateful to Trump for that. He's also getting us out of the IPCC, which is their pseudoscience body that produces the alarmist pronouncements claiming we're all going to die unless we give the UN more money and more power. So he's doing good on that. He's also getting us out of UNESCO, the UN Education Agency. He's getting us out of a whole bunch of UN agencies. And I think he deserves to be applauded for that. That takes courage. It's brilliant. Unfortunately, he just came to the rescue just the other day. The UN was on the verge of collapse. In January, the Secretary General, an actual socialist, by the way, sent out a letter to member states saying the UN is on the verge of financial collapse. And we don't know how much longer we can even keep the doors open if governments don't step up and send us money. And, you know, a lot of us were celebrating that, you know, thank you, Donald Trump, keep it up. And then right at the last moment, right at the critical time, Republicans in Congress passed a huge funding bill, sending billions to the United Nations and billions to the U.S. Department of Education. So you can thank Republicans in Congress for that. And you can thank Donald Trump for that because he signed the bill sending them the money. So a lot of us hoped for more. But, you know, we do have to give credit where credit is due. We're getting out of a lot of UN agencies. We're defunding a lot of UN programs. And so at least the momentum has shifted, right? We went from the UN perpetually expanding, perpetually consuming more of our money, perpetually usurping more power, to now a UN that is on defense, a UN that is in retreat, a UN that has numerous agencies that are on the brink of collapse thanks to our lack of participation and funding. And so let's keep pushing for more movement in that direction.
Well, if you ask me, he missed a great opportunity there. That building would have made a great Trump Tower.
Absolutely. Right. Oh, man.
Something else he could put his name on it. Bigly.
It would have been beautiful.
Would have been so beautiful. Everybody thinks so. Right. Any questions, comments on this topic? By the way, I have a comment, and this goes back to the Iran thing too. I think the typical American really, they don't care until it affects them, and it's affecting them now because of the price of gas. Ask me how I know. I just filled up my van today. $70 fill my van with gas. I had a little sticker shock today. But back to the climate thing, one of their main goals, I think, is selling their carbon credits, right?
Yep, absolutely. And you know what's interesting? They are now pushing the same kind of COVID nonsense for energy. And they were trying to do this with climate. There was a few years there. I don't know if people were paying attention where they were saying it's a climate emergency. Biden needs to declare an emergency. We're going to use the COVID strategy, 2 weeks to flatten the CO2 curve. We're going to, lockdowns, all of that. They were openly saying this. The head of the World Homicide Organization, I was there in Azerbaijan 2 years ago when he said that climate change was now the greatest public health crisis of our time. I caught up with the WHO's head of climate and public health policy and asked her about this on camera. And she says, oh, yeah, climate change equals global warming. Global warming equals mosquitoes. And so clearly you need to give us all your money. Right. But they're dead serious about this. And now they're saying the International Energy Agency is saying, hey, with the Strait of Hormuz closed, the prices of energy are skyrocketing. We should have people work from home. I mean, all the same nonsense. And so they're always looking for excuses. And I just want to point out for Americans, we've got more energy than we could use in 1,000 lifetimes, whether it's Alaska, whether it's under Montana and Wyoming, whether it's nuclear power. We've got oil coming out of our ears. The government has classified a lot of it as like a national security secret. They won't let us get to it. We've got plenty of oil. We've got plenty of energy. They're deliberately restricting our access to energy so that they can do these policies. The policies are not a response to a lack of energy. The lack of energy is an effort to justify the policies that they want to put in place.
Right. And we are the carbon they want to reduce.
That's right. And when you understand that, you understand the whole agenda, right?
So, I should also point out, and this is a whole other show, but oil and gas are not fossil fuels.
Right.
I mean, if you look at it scientifically, they do not derive from fossils. So, I mean, they're natural resources. We have them. They're not hurting anything. There's no way that human beings with all of, we couldn't do what they claim we're doing. So,
right.
All right. Next topic. What's the real story behind Epstein? And are they ever going to release any names of any substance? And why hasn't anybody been arrested except for Ghislaine Maxwell?
Very good questions. We just did a special series in the New American Magazine on this. I would encourage people to read it because you are not going to find these facts from the fake media. I guarantee it. So one of the first things to say is it's as bad as you think and worse. They were raping children in large numbers. They were using that to blackmail some of the most powerful people in the world. Epstein was connected to the Rothschild. He was connected to the Rockefellers. He was connected to all of these power players that we keep hearing about. And a conspiracy theory. No, it's no theory. And it's not even a conspiracy anymore. They're telling us what they're doing. So that's important for people to understand. Bill Clinton, Bill Gates, you name them, they were involved. Even people in the Trump administration, which I think is probably one of the reasons why we're not hearing more about this, why we're not seeing more prosecutions. Howard Lutnick, cabinet secretary, lied to the American people, said he had no relationship with Epstein after going to visit him at his house. Turns out he actually went to his island with his children. Okay, inquiring minds would like to know what in the world was going on there. But you're right. We have not seen any arrests except for Ghislaine Maxwell. The Europeans have thankfully done a little bit. They're now prosecuting the former prime minister of Norway, Torbjørn Jagland, and that's good. The Council of Europe, where he served as secretary general, has actually stripped him of his diplomatic immunity so that he could be prosecuted in a Norwegian court. So kudos to the Norwegians. I've got plenty of my own differences with the Norwegian government, but on this, they're doing good. Lord Mandelson, of course, is in the crosshairs now, former Prince Andrew. The Rothschild Bank, the Rothschild Group's headquarters in Paris, was just raided by French law enforcement, which is incredible because their globalist president, Emmanuel Macron, is also a Rothschild guy. So, you know, maybe this happened without his permission. I don't know. But good things are happening little by little in Europe. Unfortunately, in the United States, not so much. And of course, I'm sure you saw this, Rob, but when Attorney General Pam Bondi was asked on the floor of Congress how many indictments and investigations were underway, the response was, look at the stock market. The stock market's doing really good. Well, mm-hmm. The stock market's not doing really good anymore. And I still want to know, where are the arrests and where are the indictments? So we need to keep pushing for this. You know, it's worse than just raping children. They were also engaged in what I think was a forced breeding program, genetic engineering program, cloning. You know, I did a big in-depth article on this. Again, you can find it at thenewamerican.com. It's in our print magazine. But this was more monstrous than you could even begin to imagine. We've got smoking gun evidence that was the case. And you asked, you know, why aren't the names being released? That's a very good question, because when Congress passed a law ordering this information to be released, they authorized the DOJ to redact the names of the victims, right, not the perpetrators, not Epstein's associates. And yet that's exactly what the DOJ did. In fact, they released a bunch of naked videos of these poor girls, some of them underage. They released a lot of their names, but they were very careful to redact the names of the people who Epstein was corresponding with about torturing pieces of pizza and things like this. This is unconscionable. And as far as I'm concerned, the U.S. government is a co-conspirator in this crime spree unless and until they open up and start prosecuting these people.
Think that's going to ever happen?
I don't know. You know, what's really shocking to me, Rob, is that there's a lot of jurisdictions that have power in this case, right? Epstein was in New Mexico. His ranch was at the center of a lot of this. He was in Palm Beach, right? A lot of stuff going on in Palm Beach. Why isn't Ron DeSantis, why isn't Attorney General Utmeyer, why are they not investigating? Why are they not filing criminal charges here? Why is the local DA in Palm Beach not filing charges here? What about New York? Right, the guy had a penthouse in Manhattan. Why aren't the local prosecutors? I mean, Letitia James had plenty of time to go after Trump and all his kids and everybody else. No time to go after child raping perverts, really? You know, he was back and forth in France and in Switzerland. I mean, this guy was all over the place. He wrote an email about how many babies he was going to grab in Africa, and would you like some? I would say African governments ought to start filing requests for extradition of some of the people involved here. So there's a lot of jurisdictions where there's a nexus. And for me, it's astounding that we're not seeing any action anywhere, right? State of New Mexico could bring criminal charges right now against people who were floating around at Epstein's ranch. State of Florida could bring charges. The French could bring charges. So I think it's essential that we keep pushing on this. You know, it's not a Democrat hoax. We're not just going to leave it in the rearview mirror. If we don't get justice and accountability, we're going to see more of these horrific crimes.
Well, because, you know, the DOJ does have the unredacted list of names, right? Yes, I mean, they've got the files.
Yep.
They know who's who.
Yes, they do. They absolutely do. And they can indict a ham sandwich, right?
I mean, right, exactly.
Harvey Silverstein or Silvergate, he said that the average American commits 3 felonies a day. I mean, there are endless crimes that these child raping perverts could be charged with. And the smoking gun evidence is right there in the emails. I've read them with my own eyes. All the evidence a prosecutor could ever dream of. Now, Alex Acosta, who was the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of Florida when they were going after Epstein originally, was told, he says, that you can't mess with Epstein because he was intelligence. What is that supposed to mean, right? I would like all these people prosecuted, including, you know, if he was intelligence, who were his handlers? You as a handler of an intelligence asset don't have any right to facilitate the rape of children. I'm sorry, that's insane. So all these people need to go to jail.
Yeah, right. Do you think he's really dead?
I don't know. I don't know. There's some weird things going on, right? If you look at the medical examiner's report, and we talk about this in the New American as well, the medical examiner's report identified an enlarged prostate. Well, according to his medical records, he had had a radical prostatectomy. They had removed his prostate, and you know, prostates don't typically grow back. So, was that dead body really Jeffrey Epstein, or was it some homeless guy? You know, there's a lot of weird stuff going on. A camera's malfunctioning. Some of the jail guards depositing large amounts of cash at the bank right before and right after this happened. There are some really serious questions about that. I would not be surprised, honestly, if Epstein were still alive. And I certainly do not believe that he committed suicide.
Right. Yeah. Crazy. All right. Another opportunity, folks. Questions, comments? I know all you can do is shake your head, right? So, I mean, what do we do about this, Alex?
Well, for one, we pray fervently. You know, we need divine intervention here. We need divine assistance. And, you know, I'm not usually one to invoke imprecatory prayers, but I would encourage people to go back and read Psalms and read about how David prayed God would judge some of his enemies. And, you know, I know we need to love our enemies. We need to love those who persecute us. But I don't feel like I need to have a lot of sympathy for people who rape children. For people who commit ghastly crime. You know, I've got six children. I'm a father of six so far, and it's heartbreaking. And, you know, we know the purpose of government as defined by God in his word is the punishment of evildoers. He's a minister of God to be a terror unto evildoers and to protect the good, to protect innocent children and the innocence of children. Instead, we seem to have a government that is protecting the evildoers and terrorizing the good, right? As the folks in Colorado know, they don't even want you to be able to talk to children about what the scriptures teach. So we have it exactly backwards. And so I think Christians need to go back to the word of God, understand we need to hate evil. We need to, and in this country, we are the sovereigns, right? We, the people, are supposed to be the sovereigns. So all these commands to government, they apply to us. We have an obligation to force our servants, our public servants, to do what they are required to do. So be on the phone with your member of Congress. Be on the phone with your state attorney general. Set up a meeting if you have to. Get together with some others. Be in the Word of God and be in prayer. We cannot allow this to continue.
Well, it's one thing to love our enemies, but we are not to love God's enemies, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Scripture has a lot to say about what happens to you when you mess with little kids.
Yep. It'd be better if you had a millstone tied around your neck and you were thrown to the bottom of the sea. And frankly, this stuff is going on a large scale, right? It didn't end with Jeffrey Epstein. And there needs to be a very clear message sent right now that not only is this not going to be tolerated, but if you engage in it, you will be hunted down. You will be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. And you know, this is just a line that you just can't cross. And right now, not only have we crossed it, we're starting to normalize it with entertainment. It's sickening. And so I would urge parents, you know, if you've got children of your own, make sure you are protecting them. A lot of these evildoers are grooming them online. A lot of them are being groomed in the government schools. They're being desensitized to this perversion. They're being groomed for future abuse. In fact, the latest numbers from the government, 17% of the victims of public schools are victims now of sexual abuse and misconduct by faculty, right? Almost 20% of the children in government schools are going to be victims of sexual misconduct or sexual abuse at the hands of faculty. So we as a society have tolerated this for far too long. And I believe that the church bears a big part of the responsibility here. Right. The pulpits have been silent. Nobody wants to hear anymore what the Bible teaches about government and law enforcement and family and crimes against children. And so it's time, I think, for Christians to get active in this realm again, run for public office, pressure those who are supposed to be your public servants, and definitely parents and grandparents, protect your precious little ones, because if you don't, nobody's going to do it for you.
Yeah, and you know, folks, it's not just Epstein. We got to remember the hundreds of thousands of kids that went missing during the Biden years, coming across the border. Suddenly, they're just gone, hundreds of thousands. So,
yep.
All right, so let's talk about your book, Alex. You've just put out a new book, "Woke and Weaponized." dealing with the educational system.
Yeah, so this is my third book on education. And
can we put that up on the screen, Spencer?
Yeah, and what we wanted to do here was not just expose the system, although we did do that. It's called How Karl Marx Got Control, Won the Battle for American Education, and How We Can Win It Back. But we wanted to also offer concrete solutions on how we as Christians, how we as parents, how we as the church can move forward in this battle. So, you know, we do expose in a very detailed way the origins of this system. I actually started off in chapter one with a guy called Robert Owen. He's the first guy that seriously came up with the idea that the government ought to be educating our children. He says he was talking to spirits. He says his goal in life was to destroy the great trinity of evil, by which he was referring to marriage and family, private property, and irrational religion, by which he meant Christianity. So this is the genesis of this system, right? People need to understand that that's where this comes from. You can't reform something that comes from roots like this. But I had the privilege of writing it with my friend Robert Bortons. He's the CEO of Classical Conversations. It's the largest homeschool program in the world with 140,000 students. In fact, my own children are enrolled there. So we tried to do it through the lens of classical education. And we spent a lot of time closer to the end, like 6-7 chapters on, you know, how do we move forward from here? Because it's starting to become common knowledge that we have a problem now. You know, more and more parents are saying we got to get our children out of this system. And so that's good. The Overton window is shifting. But now the very same people who gave us this demonic system, I call it a satanic discipleship program, are now saying, oh, don't worry, we'll help you. Right? What did Ronald Reagan say? The nine scariest words in the English language are right, from the government, and I'm here to help. So now they want to help us by giving us free money. And so, you know, we tackle that threat head on, which, you know, we knew we were going to be facing headwinds because it's mostly our friends and allies who are promoting this. I think mostly out of a misguided sense of urgency and trying to do something here. But that's the UN's plan for taking control of Christian education and homeschooling, is to give everybody free government money and then force us to obey. So we end with some concrete solutions on how we can move forward without risking the independence and the liberty that those who came before us fought so hard to secure.
Tell us about Dewey.
So John Dewey, he's often called the founding father of the American public school system. We actually devote an entire chapter to him. You can't understand American education without him. But he was a big fan of the Soviet Union. In fact, he went to the Soviet Union, and you can read his essays that he wrote from there. They are absolutely bonkers. You know, he can't find enough good things to say about the Soviets. It's a wonderful system. It's marvelous. They're instilling a collectivistic mentality in the minds of the children. And, you know, it's just so great. He can't get enough of it. And so that's the kind of guy we're dealing with. So he was the head of the NEA. He got together with the Rockefeller dynasty, John D. Rockefeller, to basically seize control of the education system that was only just then starting to come under the control of the government. And he weaponized it to dumb down the American population. And he was very open about his agenda that education should be used as a means to an end, as a tool, he said, for bringing about the necessary transformation. So for him, education was not about teaching your children to fear the Lord, teaching them how to think, nothing like that. It was to be a tool for transforming society. And ultimately, he wanted a society that looked like the Soviet Union. He didn't agree with the revolutionary means. He didn't believe in armed force to overthrow the system. But he figured if we can brainwash these kids, if we can capture the hearts and minds of the next generation, we won't need armed force to overthrow the system. It will just come naturally. And so that was his objective. He was a degenerate who created his own false religion. Him and his buddies got together and they wrote the Humanist Manifesto, which was kind of like the founding document of the religious humanist movement. And you can read it today. It's online. They call it the Humanist Manifesto 1. Very interesting document. It says that religious humanists regard the universe as self-existing and not created, which, of course, God tells us in Genesis 1:1 that the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. It's basically communism and atheism masked in religious garb. And unfortunately, that actually became the established religion of the United States. In 1962, 1963, you know, you remember they banned prayer, they banned the Bible readings in public school. And the justice who wrote the dissent in that case, Justice Potter Stewart, actually understood exactly what was happening. He said what we did here was not create neutrality with respect to religion. What we did here was we established the religion of secularism, which, if you really think about it, right, there is no God, there's no right and wrong, therefore I'm God, therefore I can determine for myself what's right and wrong. It's actually the oldest line in the book, right? You go back to Genesis chapter 3, you have Satan telling Eve that, oh, ye shall be as gods, knowing good and evil, right? It's the same horrific lie from the pit of hell that now, unfortunately, has been taught to multiple generations of American children.
Yes, and we have schools in our own communities named after the man. So,
yep, that's right. All over the country, John Dewey Elementary, John Dewey Middle School, John Dewey High. It's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. Nobody in America gets an education degree without learning the glories of Herr John Dewey.
Yeah, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Alex, I had such high hopes for Trump's second term. You know, on his first couple of days, he was on fire. He was doing everything he said he was going to do. And, of course, we had Doge. That lasted until May, and then that was the end of that. You know, so we're a little bit off the rails here. Do you see us ever getting things straightened out? I mean, obviously, I think I can say with all certainty that we're not going to have another Republican president after this. I think we're going to go back to where we were at before. And honestly, it appears to me that both parties are equally at fault for this.
Yeah. I call it the uni party. You know, yes, officially we have a distinction between the parties, but it's mostly a distinction in rhetoric. I would encourage people to use the Freedom Index that the New American puts out. You'll see your congressman's voting record right there and how it aligns with the Constitution. What you'll find is Republicans hate the Constitution almost as much as Democrats do, and they vote accordingly, with a handful of exceptions. So, you know, as far as where we go from here, I think a lot depends on the church. You know, I think if American Christians would come to their senses and humble themselves and repent for all of this wickedness and start discipling their children in the fear and the nurture and the discipline, the admonition of the Lord, maybe we could see a kind of a miraculous turnaround. But on the current trajectory, we're on the highway to destruction. And I mean that in the most literal sense. I don't know how exactly that will look. You know, will God use the Chinese and the Russians? Will, you know, we have a domestic revolution, all of the above, financial collapse? I mean, that's the road that we're on right now. And between the amnesty and the mass importation of the third world, you know, pagans and Muslims, this is all by design. It's all being used to destroy our country. And unfortunately, you know, when we're looking for somebody to blame, you know, got to pick up a mirror. And in this country, we elect our representatives, at least we used to until relatively recently. The machines haven't been
I'm not so sure if we do or not. You know?
That's a fair point. But that's a modern phenomenon, right? 1973, when the Supreme Court purported to find a right to murder your baby, we still had, I think, somewhat legitimate elections. And the proper response should have been, all right, that's a dumb opinion. Nobody's going to be killing babies in our state. But that's not what happened. We said, oh, well, the Supreme Court says you can kill babies. I guess let's kill 80 million of them. And then let's export this wickedness to the whole world. So America is in rebellion against God. And America's in a unique situation because we had more biblical truth in this country than probably any people, you know, maybe ever, with the possible exception of the ancient Israelites, right? There's a Bible in every home here. Everybody used to understand these things. So I think we're going to reap what we have sown. And I think it's going to be tough. So I would urge people to be prepared for that. Make sure your own personal relationship with God is right through Jesus Christ. And, you know, prepare your children for tough times ahead, because I think they're coming. I hope they won't. And I'm going to keep fighting with everything I've got to try to turn this around. But we need to be realistic. And ultimately, we recognize that God is sovereign. And if he determines to judge the United States, there is nobody on this planet who has a right to question or rebuke him for that.
Well, Alex, I had one last question. I don't even know if I need to even ask it. What do you think are the chances of the Department of Education being disbanded?
Zero. And even if it is, all those functions are just going to be transferred to other departments. So don't get your hopes up, folks. And even if miraculously the Department of Education was shut down and the feds were taken out of the picture, you still wouldn't want to send your children to the local government indoctrination camp. It would be just as bad.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. That was an excellent answer. Thank you. All right. We are out of time, folks. LibertySentinel.org. You can find Alex's information there. We are out of time for today. I would ask you to please share the program to your social media. Help us get the information out. Next week, our new co-host is going to be with you for his first show on WCN-TV. And it is Coach Dave Dobenmeyer. And he's going to be welcoming his guest, Stuart Rhodes. So have a good week, and God bless you.